The Woman Who Became a Spider, an online interactive class in three parts. Part 3, 25 minutes. So she gets a dream and it parts the waves and she's able to get down into the unconscious. And in the bottom of the sea, she notices a little house. And there's a son lying there. The boy is lying there. He's lost an eye. Now the son refuses to come out. She calls for the son to come out, but he won't come out. And he says, well, I won't come out because your parents despise me. So I'm not coming. What do you think it means that the boy won't come back to her? She's found him now, but he won't come out to her because her parents despise him. How could we understand that? He would never have anything more to do with her. It's an immature response, rejection, and yes, I think so. And what is rejected by what, and what is refusing to come out? Let's just spell it out psychologically. I think what you said is true, but let's spell it out a little further. Well, we could just say that the animus, because it is despised by the conscious viewpoint of the parents, the animus refuses to cooperate. The animus, you know, the unconscious will not work with us, will not communicate with us unless we have a good attitude towards it. And she, the girl, is willing enough, but her parents, her parental attitudes, to despise them. And under those conditions, he's not going to talk to her. So she's still carrying too much of her parents' past attitudes. And he's not ready to have anything to do with her at this point. So we do not have the conditions under which this feminine figure can communicate with her animus freely at this point, because there's been too much rejection. So now she runs around the house three times, and then she sees two paths. One goes up to the heavens and one goes to the earth. So she has a choice, and she chooses the one to the heavens. Now that's obscure, but it obviously means something. She's not choosing to go to the earth. She's underwater. But the path would seem to head towards the earth. I think the implication is that it would get her to, she's in the underworld of the unconscious, but the path would lead her onto the ground. But she rejects that path and instead goes into the heavens, the path that leads up to heaven. Now what about that? A spiritual bypass? Okay. And the comment was, she's resisting embodiment and the trials that would go with that. She's moving towards death, really, instead of coping with her life. Instead of coping. Skips right into the spirit. Yeah, I think that's right. She's not struggling with Middle Earth experience. She's just as see, both the young man is offended, so he refuses immaturely, and the young woman is also bereft and dejected, so she gives up on human experience and goes off to the clouds. Yeah, skips into the spirit. Yeah, I think that's right. So it's not going very well at this point between the animus and the feminine. We're not doing too well in their attempt to get together. But she goes up and finds a hole. And she climbs into it. It's hard to get through the hole into another world, but she took courage and jumps and gets hold of the edge and swings herself through the opening and once more found air and heaven and land. So what about this transition? Something's changed a little bit, I think, because she's described as having taken courage. And indeed, she's a threshold, yes. But her character seems a little different because she has courage and strength, and she does something difficult. Comment was, she used her muscles and her thinking, so she began to develop her animus energy to get to the next level. I think that's right. Yeah, who is that speaking? Eileena? Tina. Oh, sorry. Okay. Hi. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think she's integrating. I think she's integrating more strength and more of her power now. I agree. Yes. Okay. The question is, why would you think she was? I mean, I see what you're saying, but what has enabled her to do this? Is it the fact that she's on the trip? Yeah, I think she's struggling. I mean, it's everything is a struggle here, and as she struggles and has her ups and downs, I think she gets stronger. She's evolving, yes. This was a trial and a test, and she passed it by being able to jump. Comment is, there can be a descent when you don't know what you're doing, then it draws on more of your inner resources than you knew that you had. Then your present level of development would suggest. Then something rises to the occasion. Yes. So she's growing, isn't she? She's maturing in the face of difficulty. Yes. She finds more of her inner strength, and thus, yeah. Yeah, right. But she gets to a lake and she thinks she's just going to sit down and die. She doesn't want to think anymore. Life no longer has meant anything to her. So what's going on here? Why is she despairing at this point? Well, she thinks she's lost forever her chance to meet the masculine, right? She's despairing because she's climbed away from where he was. He's refused to come to her, and she just doesn't. She's feeling despair because she thinks the whole thing is going nowhere. She's not ever gonna meet the masculine. But then, comment is, she's worrying that she will die and disintegrate. She doesn't want to think anymore. It's a temporary regression. It reminds me of Psyche and Eros, where every time that she gets the next task, she thinks, oh no, and she wants to die and fall apart. And then, yes, another man arrives with his kayak, his oars, and his harpoon, everything of shining copper. So here's the animus again in a new form. See, the animus reappears. We could say transformed, perhaps, or at least a new version of the animus. And it's interesting, he seems to represent the moon, and the moon is a single eye, only one orb. So I wonder whether the animus, having one eye put out, the second one becomes the moon in a way. There's echoes here of the legend of Odin, who lost one eye and became a one-eyed animus figure, and his other eye lay in the bottom of the well and could look up into the heavens and foresee the future, or in other words, could look into the interior of things and understand the deeper meaning of things. So that's the function of the animus, to understand more deeply, and perhaps indicated by the one-eyed boy as well as the moon. She hides in the deep grass, and the man does what? He sings a song and makes her naked. So now, what's going on here? What could this mean? He sings a song. A woman's breast tempts the kayak, who crosses the shining lake to caress soft cheeks. And she becomes naked. He sings the song twice and she's naked. He sings the song a third time and she's sitting with him in the kayak. And he rows away. What's going on? Okay, very seductive, yes. So What's happening to this young woman now? She's on a journey, right? A journey of development. What's developing for her? Comment was, it's almost putting her into a spell. Yeah, definitely. Because he's singing the clothes off her. Definitely in a spell, yeah. And Barbara says, awakening a new part of the self, yes. And what can we say any, can we be more specific about what's being awakened? The body, yeah, and more specifically still, sexuality, right? So this is, you know, before she wasn't interested in body, but now she discovers sexuality. She's seduced, she's awakened, and she's naked with this man, and she's become unconscious, so apparently they have been having sex together, or making love, or whatever. So you see, this is another, for a woman, this is another major way in which the animus is encountered through sexuality. And it's described here in very vivid, intense language and imagery. And indeed, sexuality can be an extremely vivid and intense experience when a woman discovers it, and a profound connection with the unconscious. So I think that's conveyed there. And then he takes her to the two houses and say you must go into the big house, not the little one. She goes into the big house, but it's very dreary, and the woman with clothes made of the gut of a bearded seal comes and speaks to her and warns her. So who's this? New character appears. If she apparently, if the woman says that if you just go with that man and do as he tells you, he will kill you. So that will be the end of your development. What does that suggest? The comment is to stay awake and connect to your own best wisdom, like the guts of a bearded seal, that is gut wisdom. As opposed to what? What's the alternative to this? And the answer was, as opposed to going off into a trance and becoming a part of this man's thing, part of the head. So somebody else, what would that, and Barbara, you said naked. What would that mean if she went, if she just went with this man? What would that mean in terms of psychological development? Somebody else. If she's going into a trance and she just stays with this man, somehow it's death. So how could we understand that in terms of psychological development? And the answer was forgetting to think for herself, just to check out and fuse with whoever she's with. And somebody else? And the answer, the relationship with the animus will stay immature. And specifically, perhaps she might stay in a kind of a sexual possession, right? She might just say, stay possessed by sexuality and relate to the animus in a sexual way, and that wouldn't necessarily lead to further growth if she stayed there. So it suggests again that there are many paths, many branches to the path, and this could be a kind of a cul-de-sac if you just got trapped in that. Because perhaps because it would be concretizing too much the relationship with the masculine in terms of sexuality. Sexuality can become an end in itself rather than a part of psychological maturity. Okay, and somebody said that the woman represents the wisdom, the gut, her own gut wisdom, her own feminine gut wisdom, right? So she could stay more in connected to her own self in her development, her own feminine identity. So then, the woman tells her how to defy the man, and the man comes and seems like he would kill her. So she throws whale skin in his face. What do you make of that? What would that be? She's in a deep depression. Okay, and what were you going to say, the other speaker? So there were two replies. The whale is a mammal in the ocean, so it's about integration. So to counteract the imbalance of the role of the male, she throws the whale skin. And the second person said, yeah, I have the same idea. The mammal is about another level of development. It's about the great mother, and she's tuned in, and it's the animal that could help navigate feelings in the unconscious. Yeah, it seems to magnify the power of the feminine, doesn't it? Yeah, I think. Yes. Yeah, clearly the feminine is gathering its power here to withstand the power of the masculine and balance it. Yes. Yes, I think so. He fell out down out of the air and lost his strength. And then the women go into the house and they see that it's the house of the moon spirit, and that this man was the man of the moon himself, and which had been made harmless for a time with the magic of the little woman in the skins. The moon spirit is incalculable and can become dangerous. He takes, but he also gives, and man must sacrifice to him in order to share the things over which he rules. So they're really dealing with a god here, right? The animus is now here shown as a great and terrible god, incalculable and dangerous, a truly otherworldly archetypal spirit who has to be treated with great respect. And so that's what's going on. I mean, the feminine is finding a way to manage this archetypal force and relate to it. And this is the experience for women of learning to deal with the animus, and for men learning to deal with the anima, that these are gods and they are mysterious and unknowable, and they have to be treated with great respect. By gods, I mean powerful forces from the collective unconscious, which we can't ever afford to neglect, because they will possess us and burn us up if we don't treat them with respect. And we can't live richly without them. But if we get too close to them, they can kill us. So they see that the people on the ground, she looks down through the rafters of his house and she sees the people on the ground, and they're holding up water to the moon spirit as a sacrifice. So the people on the ground all have ways of relating to the moon spirit. And she has been on, this is interesting because it shows the collective below of the people in general, and their collective rituals, their religions, if you like, by which they pray to the moon spirit and have a relationship with the moon spirit. And the moon spirit takes care of them sometimes if they relate to it well. So this is like religion. This is what we do when we go to church or the temple. But remember, this young woman or this feminine spirit has taken a much more difficult journey to find a more intimate and more dangerous relationship with the moon spirit. So this is like individuation, which is not just practicing the rituals, but seeking an individual resolution with the unconscious, facing much deeper challenges and much more danger. And indeed, it doesn't necessarily turn out well. What about this idea that the sacrifices of the people bring fresh water to the sea animals who often suffer from thirst? An interesting idea. You see, the people are feeding the sea animals fresh water because, according to this legend, the sea animals, like the whales and the walruses, suffer from thirst because they can't drink fresh water. Do you make of that? Well, I'm just going to say what I think since we're running out of time. I think, again, it's the idea of humans who live on land and have access to fresh water communicating with the gods and having something to offer. The gods are the powers that be, the animals in the collective unconscious, the sea animals, are enormously important and enormously powerful, but humans have something special to offer. It's like consciousness. Humans, when we interact with the archetypes, we can bring consciousness to bear, which the archetypes don't have by themselves. And so I think giving the sea animals fresh water is like bringing consciousness, which enlivens the archetypes in the unconscious. So each of these people who are praying have a little ritual which they can make, which is the little version of what this young woman has gone through, a little version of offering something, whereas the young woman has gone through something much bigger and more dangerous. So she wants to go back to Earth, and the old woman says, well, I can help you, and she plaits a rope, but you must open your eyes as soon as you touch the Earth. And of course she doesn't, and she turns into a spider. So you might have hoped for a happy ending, but didn't turn out that way. What do you make of it? So the reply was, don't go back to sleep. Keep a hold of your treasures that you got through your journey. Stay awake. Open your eyes. Open your perspective. Open your viewpoint. On the other hand, the Navajo people say that the spider web is the creative matrix of all life at the beginning. And I know this is different because it's Inuit, but still. Right. She wants to go home to her personal life. But she fails. It's the return between heaven and earth. It's the return. It's like the journey to the underworld. And then the return. Jung said that the return is very difficult and very dangerous. In fact, he said it's the most dangerous part of the journey. And indeed, the danger is such that she cannot do it. She can't get back to Earth. She can't bring her wisdom back and be an ordinary girl with her family on the planet Earth. She doesn't make it. So, yes, I take your point. I think that was Tina again, that she instead becomes the spider woman who's the creator of all things. So she has an important role to play, but she doesn't succeed in coming back to human experience. And it's very ambiguous, isn't it? Is this the necessary process of the creation of the world, that the spider woman has to be created and this is how she's created? Perhaps that's part of it. But at another level, it's a human journey from which she doesn't return. You know, it's like if you think about somebody who becomes a piano player, a concert pianist, and spends her life traveling from one performance to the next and sleeping in hotels. And she has a wonderful creative life and spreads music all around. But she can't have her human life again because she's too busy being a performer. It's a bit like that. You may gain in the creative life, but you may lose in the personal life. And that's a little bit like her fate. The comment is, the spider becomes almost the archetype of creation, the web binding. Spiders of the world, yes. Yeah, it's a great and important role, but it's not a human role. She loses her humanity. I think you know, it's an interesting how the dream, the story ends in this ambiguous but profound way. I think it's pointing out the trade-off, maturity. And life, the life cycle, includes trade-offs. You know, we gain in wisdom, but we don't necessarily keep all of our humanity as we gain in wisdom. You can lose some of that. comment was, these kind of tales, they're transmitted from one generation to the next. They're teaching stories about the perils involved in the individuation journey. It's important that they don't all end well. Yes. And Jung is very insistent that he doesn't recommend individuation to anybody. If you can live in your culture, be satisfied with the religious system of your culture, you're better off just staying there. Don't, for goodness sake, try to venture into the unconscious by yourself. It's too dangerous. So the individuation journey is something we're forced into, not something he recommends that you try just for fun. It's too serious, right? He says that individuation is for people for whom religion no longer works. It's a predicament of modern man that he might have to individuate, whereas in previous centuries, perhaps, most people could be well taken care of by a religious system. Well, that's all for today. I hope you enjoyed the class, and I hope you will listen to the other audio tapes that are on this website. There are several more, and they're all interesting. And I hope you'll also read more papers on this website. They're also interesting. And I hope you will consider taking other classes at the Jung Foundation. And I look forward to further discussions with you. Goodbye. This is the end of part 3. Thank you.